This is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul.
Well, hi, Susan. We're starting now with news from local papers, but then we're going to have some stories about upcoming events in the area.
Let's start with the Nevada Journal, which reported that one of the big topics at a recent Nevada City Council meeting was whether to have a community-wide trash pickup day for residents. Nevada used to have one, complete with curbside pickup and a drop-off spot. It was a big deal back then, with residents leaving everything from old appliances to old furniture at curbside. Parks and Recreation Director Tim Hansen told Nevada Council members that there were problems, that some people did not sort items out, forcing work crews to do it. And sometimes it took weeks to pick up all the items. City Administrator Matt Martison said it would cost at least $5,000 for a cleanup day. And there was talk about how to make sure that people who live outside Nevada did not bring their disposables into the city on cleanup day. After all this discussion, the council did not take any action. Council members also talked about mosquitoes. Council member Barb Mittman said residents have been asking her when the city will spray for bugs. Parks and Rec Director Tim Hansen is the one responsible for deciding when to spray, and he said his department follows spraying recommendations on a website controlled by Iowa State University. He said until mosquito levels are high enough to warrant spraying, the city does not spray. But he said spraying units are ready for use. And one more note from the city council. City engineer Larry Stevens told council members that the intersection of 19th Street and South B is now busy enough that a four-way stop should be put in. The city has sent a memo to the Iowa Department of Transportation, which must put it through their formal approval process. And the Journal also reported on the recent retirement of Nevada native Roger Coover. He became publisher of the Journal in 1974, and that led him to a 45-year career that took him to newspapers in Colorado, Georgia, Florida, and finally to California. He said he has not been back in Nevada in 20 years, but he hopes to return someday. In the Boone News Republican, word that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, members of her administration, and state and federal conservation officials marked the fifth anniversary of the nutrient reduction strategy at her press conference last week. Reynolds and others gathered under a big tent at the Iowa State Bioresearch Farm near the Boone-Story County border. She said the program's first 5 years have set it up for more participation from producers and stakeholders in the future. The program was designed to reduce the amount of crop fertilizer leaking into local waterways by up to 45%, using cost shares and other financial aid to put water quality projects on farm fields. Crop fertilizers such as nitrogen and phosphorus pollute watersheds and eventually flow into the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico, where they accelerate the growth of algae blooms that consume oxygen. That creates conditions that can kill off aquatic life and make water unswimmable by humans. Also in the News Republican, a feature story on Jeff Wells, who has closed the books after a 45-year teaching career, 40 of them in Boone. He taught English and math at the high school and was also the tennis coach. In his words, "I've never had a desire to do anything else." In the Story City Herald, word about events at this past weekend's Scandinavian Days, which had something for just about everyone, including food stands, carousel rides, a petting zoo, a dunk tank, games, dancers, fireworks, and much more. There's also a feature story about the new LED lights donated to the Story City Antique Carousel just in time for the carousel's opening day. And the Herald reported that Judge Story's theatrical troupe will conclude its 35th anniversary season this coming Saturday and Sunday, June 9th and 10th, with its production of Mary Poppins. It's based on the classic Disney film from the 1960s about the life of the Banks family and their inability to keep a nanny for their two rambunctious children. Mary Poppins will be performed at the Story Theater Grand Opera House on Broad Street in Story City. In the Tri-County Times, word that the new windscreen recently installed around the Ballard High School tennis courts and the possibility that it violates the city's sign ordinance drew a big crowd to Huxley's council chamber. Ballard coaches, parents, and booster club members voiced their support for the windscreen, which is red and blue and has a Welcome to Ballard message on it. Also in the Times, a feature story about Madrid resident Linda Vaughn, who is juggling life in the Army National Guard along with married life and attending Mercy College of Health Sciences in Des Moines. And that is your summary of recent news from the pages of the Nevada Journal, the Boone News Republican, the Story City Herald, and the Tri-County Times. I'm KHOI Civic Reporter Dennis Hart. I'll be back Friday with a summary of news from the Ames Tribune.
Thank you, Dennis. I have to admit, I'm glad that he didn't announce any of the stories we'll be covering during the rest of the program. We covered Scandinavian Days last week, and we had some of those cast members.
That was a lot of fun, and the show was great. I was very impressed with Mary Poppins. It's going to close this weekend. Very good show.
And this week we'll be featuring the second big festival of the summer, which is Jefferson Bell Tower Days. Before that, we have some history to talk about.
Well, now let's get started because you know I'm a history buff, Susan.
First, I want to announce the Becoming Boone Gallery opening this Friday, June 8th at 1 p.m. at the Boone History Center. If you've seen the History Center in past years, you'll be amazed at the expansion of display space made possible by a partnership with the National Endowment for Humanities and Iowa Humanities. I saw a preview, and I was very impressed, especially with the artifacts brought over from the maybe Dowd Eisenhower House, which is under renovation. Of course, the displays will be open to visitors during regular hours after this weekend. The next story was one that I learned about on the pages of the Sunday Des Moines Register a couple of weeks ago, but I couldn't resist exploring it because it's about the kind of things that make a small town proud of itself and come to life. And one of the anchor institutions that we always feature when we can are the small town libraries. And this was a story about a librarian in Sutherland, Iowa, whose love of history has brought vitality to his town and through a Facebook page to thousands of people. At a time when social media is under such suspicion, I thought it would be fun to see how Daniel Ray Weatherall managed all this.
Well, I saw that story too, but of course it's a sad one since it's about his death. The article told how he died in a car accident a few weeks ago.
Yes, but the results of his work live on. I talked with three people who worked with him, and I thought their stories were worth sharing. Our subject on Local Talk Wednesday is how people bring vitality to small towns, and that was inspiring.
Well, I've been to Sutherland, and I'd be interested to hear his story.
The first interview was from the library, where he had been librarian. I spoke with the president of the library board, Connie Cody, and the vice president, Nancy Hill, and their voices are Connie's first and Nancy's second. Here we go.
Good afternoon. I'm Connie Cody, the president of the General N.B. Baker Library Board, and with me is Nancy Hill. She's the vice president, and we're here to visit a little about Dan Weatherall. He was our librarian who recently died in a vehicle accident, and we want to share his passion and life history of what he wanted to people to know, what communities could offer, and also about preserving history and his love for the state of Iowa.
How did you meet Dan?
I met Dan by becoming on the library board several years back. He was a member on the board, and then the librarian asked if I would like to join the library.
Why did you want to join the library?
I am a school teacher, and I think there's so much knowledge in books and the programs that libraries can offer just to spark someone's adventures of life.
When you joined the library board, was Dan already the librarian?
No. Dan became our librarian almost 2 years ago.
So he was in town for a while before he became librarian?
Yes.
And what did he do in town before he was librarian?
Well, first of all, he just a young man. He graduated from the South O'Brien Schools, and then he went to Wayne State, and then he moved to Omaha, and then went to California, and then he joined the United States Army, and then when he came back, he started working at Mugshots, and at that time, he was on the library board, and then just recently, he became the library director because our librarian at that time had resigned, and we just were kind of flabbergasted. And he handed us the board, his papers that he was resigning from the board, and we looked at it and we said, "No, you can't. We just lost our librarian." And he says, "Well, I want to apply for the position." So it was just a sigh of relief then, because we already knew from him serving on our board his love for community and for history and for the library.
Did he make changes right away as librarian?
Yes, he did. We kind of were a little stagnant in our library activities. When he became the director, we had about 100 to 125 people come through our doors per month, and we saw initially the next month about 375, and we maintain about 450 people monthly now.
What are the ages of the people who come to the library?
We just dedicated the children's section to the Erickson family, and Dan was very instrumental doing that. They had left some money upon their death to our library, and he wanted just to brighten it up, so he and a couple of our library board members painted the walls, and then he found some really neat things to decorate them with, trees and animals and airplanes, and brought in, we have Big Joe chairs and a table and everything, so it was just brought life to our children's side of the library. And then we have middle-aged people, we have older people. In fact, we have a lady in town that she's more elderly. She had stated that she'd never used the library ever, and she's a lifetime resident. And when Dan started the historical genealogy classes, that just sparked her interest. So then she started coming to the library, and she finds it hard to leave now. So that's exciting.
How many books are in the library?
8,000 and ongoing.
And what's the size of the town?
We're a population of 600.
So you have a lot of activities for a library that size.
Yes. Dan was very instrumental getting activities to get people coming through the doors and finding things that interest them.
Now that they've started coming through the doors and Dan isn't there, do you have any idea how you can keep their enthusiasm?
Nancy is the vice president. She was very close with Dan in working in these programs once he initiated them, and she has probably as much passion as Dan did that she would like to have these programs continue. And another library board member, Dan actually started to have a O'Brien County candidate forum, and we were supposed to have it, and then his death happened, and so then we had to cancel it. And she had gotten a text from him that this forum had to take place anyway, and he had already passed, and so we is determined, yes, we're going to do it. So we still held the O'Brien County forum for the candidates, and we had 50 people in attendance plus the candidates.
That's pretty good for your size of town, yes. So do you have any people who've shown an interest in being librarians?
Well, we haven't really put it out there yet. We haven't advertised it at all, because right now the board, we're looking through what the daily operations are of a library, trying to find out, you know, where files are kept, what we need to do to have it run smoothly, finding all the activities and programs that Dan did. I'm in close contact with Bonnie McEwen from the State Department. She's our consultant, and she's helping me what we should be doing. And she did also advise us not to hurry up and hire someone, to find someone who would be, will never fill Dan's shoes, you know, never, but someone that can step in and take, you know, reign of the library, keep these programs going, and plus introduce new programs that they would like to, so the library can be theirs too.
You mentioned Dan's family. Do they live in Sutherland?
He had brothers here, yes. He had a brother, Steve, who he lived with, or they lived in the same home. And he had a brother, Scott, a nephew, Kurt. They were a very close family.
Had you known each other for a long time?
No. I joined the board in 2015, and that's when I met Dan. And I never really got to know him until he became the director. And then, I mean, I was here probably as much as he was, because he would think of a project and he'd say, Nancy, go with it. So then I would do it. You know, he would think them up and I would do them.
So what kind of projects were these?
Well, we I think it was last winter, we started an obituary for our genealogy room. And so he asked me if I would find obituaries of people in town. So I started from day one and through Find a Grave and Ancestry and looking through the newspaper archives and stuff, I ended up with 5,000 obituaries. And we've most have the obituaries and the picture of their stone, and we've got them in books here in the genealogy room, and they've been used quite often.
So you have a whole genealogy room in your library.
It's mostly Dan's history. He loves the Iowa history, and he's got Iowa history books and just books on Iowa in general. Said to me after I finished that project, he said, well, now I want you to work on a digital archive, photo archive. So I've got 5,000 of those scanned. He was very, very proud of that project. The community to bring pictures, and we would scan them, and we'd return them, and we've got 5,000 of those.
It sounded like he did more than just have classes that brought people in.
His personality just kind of drew you in here, and he was a fun guy to be around. But he had so many programs here at the library that would draw people in. One day a month, he would have Arts and Crafts Day, and it started out as adult coloring. He just kind of changed it to any kind of craft, you know. So we've done everything from, you know, make flowers out of egg cartons to calligraphy to, you know, painting Easter eggs. It was just a craft day. And that was just for an hour, one day a month, and, you know, people would come to that. He had distinguished speakers, and he would have speakers come from all over the state, and they would talk. One came and talked about archaeology. We had one about preserving tombstones. We had one talk about the POW camps. He just had interest everywhere, and he was very proud of that series that he had. And then another thing he started was on every Thursday, to get the ladies in here, he would have tea at 3. So every Thursday, here we'd come, and he'd usually have cookies or something for us. So that's something that's going to continue. He was also instrumental in getting true crime series here. He would investigate, like, cold cases, and then a group of us would come, and he would give us the clues, and then we'd try to solve the crime, and he really enjoyed that.
Obviously, you did, too.
This cold cases in Iowa is what it was. The local history group, he just enjoyed that. So we have some older people here in town that had joined the group, and they were getting up in age in their 80s, and we had two that were in their 90s, and, you know, that's where the history still is. He formed this group, and so these people would come, and we would talk about Sutherland, and we would talk about where the stores were, like, in the 20s and the 30s, and different townships in the county, and he just loved that. And in fact, he had just spoke to me not too long ago about maybe making that twice a month because it was so popular. We've just now formed an O'Brien County Cemetery Preservation Association, and we are cleaning tombstones in the old cemeteries. It started out in the old Pioneer cemeteries, and we've got 7 of them on docket to do, and we've got I just worked at one this morning, and we've got 8 stones there yet to clean. But Dan was very instrumental in getting that.
There was no end, yes.
Ragby came through here last year, and we were on the gravel loop end of it. And so he was very instrumental in getting that organized, and food and committees, and that went real smooth. I think we had 1,600 people come through the gravel loop that last year. He was making a cookbook for the Pear Tree House, which is our museum here in town, and which he was on the board of that. And he was almost finished with that, so we'll see to it that that gets done. And that was to be a fundraiser as well.
Sounds like you have a lot going on in a town of a little over 600. I think you've given a lovely picture of what a difference Dan made.
He did. He is going to be missed.
He has a legacy. In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOR Community Radio. We've been visiting a very small library in the town of Sutherland to hear about the legacy of the late librarian, Daniel Ray Wetherill. This lover of books and libraries called Dan had an alter ego named Ray, the middle name of Daniel Ray Wetherill, who created the Forgotten Iowa Historical Society Facebook page. We have one of the administrators of that page to tell us what it was like to work with Ray.
My name is Linda Artliff Weinstein, and I live in a town called Morristown in New Jersey. I'm a native of Iowa. I was born and raised in Villisca in the southwestern corner, but I have been living in New Jersey for much longer than I'd like to admit.
How did you discover the Forgotten History Society?
I was surfing one day, and a friend of mine had shared a post from something called the Forgotten Iowa Historical Society, and I thought, what in the world is that? I think I better go look and see what that is. And I went, and I was hooked immediately. It was fascinating. It was just unbelievable, and I've been hooked ever since.
Well, what did you find so interesting about it?
I think what I found so interesting was that there were all of these people, whether they lived in Iowa or if they are outlanders like I am now, who shared a common experience. It's not that we were raised in Iowa. It's that we have an interest in where we came from and how it got to be what it was and what we remember. And it's just a fascinating sight. And you find that I, from southwestern Iowa, a tiny little town, have a lot in common with somebody from northeastern Iowa in a tiny little town. And we share common experiences, and also we find all kinds of information that we had no idea, even if we studied Iowa history in fifth grade.
And that's about the extent of most people's knowledge of Iowa history.
That is true. But I have found it to be absolutely fascinating that there are pockets of unbelievable knowledge out there. And I think a lot of the people who have that knowledge have been frustrated. They didn't have any place to take it. And I think the Forgotten Iowa Historical Society Facebook group gives you a place to talk to people with common interests and to share that knowledge. It's interesting.
How do you talk to them?
To the members?
Yes.
The 52,000 members these days?
Yes.
Huge number. As administrators, we rarely actually talk to our members. As members, we often post things that are of interest to us. As administrators, our work is behind the scene rather than out front generally. And so while they know that there are administrators who are keeping things running smoothly in the group, and with 52,000 people, you sometimes run into some issues. But otherwise, we are just members also. And I recently, for instance, posted a picture of my grandfather who played on the Red Oak High School football team in 1919. And I think I got more comments on that picture than I had on any other post I've ever made. So that was kind of funny. But
how did you become an administrator?
Well, I had been a member of the group for about 2 months when Ray Wetherill, the founder and creator of the organization, put a call out for somebody, please, anybody, to design a new logo, because the current one at that point was kind of bland and didn't really say much about the organization and so on. And nobody responded. And he put the call out again, and I thought, well, I can at least make it colorful. And so I did, and I sent it to Ray, and the next thing I knew, he had emailed me and said, I love it, and I want you to be an administrator. Will you be an administrator? And I said, well, sure. And I have been now for the last 2 years.
Well, how do you work with the other administrators to keep things running smoothly?
Well, while Ray was alive, Ray was really in charge. He gave us all permission to do whatever we thought necessary to keep it running. But if there was ever a question, we turned to Ray. We're having problems with this one member. What should we do about it? That kind of thing. We always turned to Ray. And we talked to him about those kinds of things on a private Facebook group that was just for the administrators. And we knew the other administrators through that group, but our relationship was really individually with Ray. Since Ray's been gone now, we are talking to each other. We have to. And it's working quite well, really. We're pleased about that and determined that we're going to keep this Facebook group going and the way Ray intended it to be.
Well, right now, you know, Facebook is under a lot of scrutiny. And I know people are talking about just canceling their Facebook memberships or whatever you call it when you have friends on Facebook. And I don't know what kind of issues a Facebook page like yours might have. What happens if somebody starts talking about contemporary politics, for example, on their posts?
We delete their post. It is one of the Ray's first rules. No politics. Well, no political commentary. Because sometimes politics is historical. So you have to make those kinds of judgments. But when those comments veer into contemporary issues, we put a stop to it. Our rules are very simple. And if people don't obey them, then we take down their posts. And if they insist on being annoying about it, we ban them from the membership.
And you can do that?
We can do that, yes. We have that ability.
And what are the simple rules besides no contemporary politics?
One of the rules, and it's kind of iffy, is if you have to ask if your post would be allowed, then probably it isn't. So that was one of Ray's funny things. And, okay, the next one is no spam ever. You can't sell anything. If you've written a book, you can ask us if you can tell the membership that you've written this book about Iowa history, but you must ask. But no sunglasses, no Birkenstocks, none of that kind of thing you find on other Facebook sites. Rule number four is you must be polite. Number five, no name calling. You'll be banned. And we have banned people for saying outright, you're just stupid. That gets you banned from the group. You can't play well with others. You're not allowed.
Iowa nice.
Iowa nice is absolutely, Ray always used that phrase, Iowa nice. Be Iowa nice. And watch your language. We don't allow profanity. No rudeness. For instance, it happened recently, somebody asked a question, a legitimate question, and a responder said, well, just Google it. We banned him. That was rude. But, you know, it was a legitimate question. That was an inappropriate response. And also then the final one, which gives us a lot of power as administrators in this group, is don't block the administrators. If you do, you'll be banned.
And how do you block the administrators?
Oh, well, if you're on Facebook, you can keep people from seeing you, from seeing what you're posting, that kind of thing. And if you do that, you will be banned.
Well, I was interested to know when I discovered the Facebook page, because it's the kind of thing I would have loved to have been aware of for a long time. But when I went on, I immediately saw, it pops up your friends who are members of the group, and there were quite a few people I knew. And I wondered, do your friends become, I guess if they're already friends of each other, then they can communicate with each other. Is that right?
Yes, but just because I have 37 friends in Villisca, Iowa, doesn't mean that all of them are members of the Forgotten Iowa Historic.
I see. And you have to go, there is a little process of becoming a member, right?
Yeah. When you apply to be a member, you have to answer three questions. Do you live in Iowa? If you don't live in Iowa, have you ever lived in Iowa? And if so, where? And if none of the above, what's your interest in our organization?
I don't think he did it consciously, but I hear over and over again that he got things started and then brought in other people. So basically, he was the catalyst for
the creator
for discussion groups at the library, the children's section at the library, the history section and genealogy section at the library. But once it's started, other people are excited and they carry it on. The first question I had when I read the article in the Des Moines Register was, what happens to all these things now? And I'm hearing the answers.
The administrators of the Forgotten Iowa Historical Society are absolutely determined that the Facebook group will go on, and it will go on in the way that Ray envisioned it, and the way he set it up, it can go on. And wasn't that brilliant?
This is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been exploring Daniel Ray Wetherall, so it's time to turn to the summer festival of the second week in June, Jefferson's Mahaney Bell Tower Days. We have Emily Neese, the chair of the festival, on the air.
Are you there, Emily? Hi. Welcome to Local Talk. Last week on our show, we featured Scandinavian Days in Story City, and now we have your Days of Festival coming up in Jefferson. So it must be the festival season in small-town Iowa, right? So tell us about, first of all, I think the festival spans from June 8th to 10th.
Yep, that is correct.
And that's this coming weekend. Well, tell us about the Bell Tower Festival. If the first thing that comes to your mind is the highlights that you want everyone to know, the headlines.
Yeah, so Friday night we're kicking things off. Our opening ceremony starts at 6:30, but we will have a barbecue going on at our rec center starting at 5. And then we have some entertainment going on after that. And then in our beverage garden, we have a DJ going on. Then we, on Saturday, we're kicking things off with a fireman's breakfast. And we have a ding-dong dash. That's a 5K and a 10K. And you can also run with your dog that our rec center is putting on. It's a pretty fun run around Jefferson. And then we have a carnival going on all weekend. So we're pretty excited about to bring that back. And Arch Allies is our Saturday night entertainment. And that's a really, really good entertainment band.
So the Arch Allies, is that sort of a rock group that does covers over a lot of old rock tunes and hits or what?
Yeah, they do covers of REO Speedwagon, kind of in that era. They're a really good time.
Is there a parade?
Oh, yes, thank you.
So there is a parade. There's got to be a parade. What time is that? It's Saturday, I take it.
Of course, yeah. Our parade is Saturday, and it will start at 11 from the Jefferson High School, and it will go all the way down to the square where the bell tower is. So, of course, yes, there's a parade.
Well, you might tell us a little bit about the bell tower. I think they've done a lot of renovation there and improvements in the past few years. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. Last year, we happened to get more bells, so we have all the octaves and ranges for our bells, and they just sound wonderful. The person who plays the bells can play any song that you could imagine, and it's just kind of fun to go up in the bell tower and see Jefferson in a whole different view.
So you can actually take tours of the bell tower and go up in the bell tower?
Correct, yeah.
And there's an elevator, right?
Yes.
Good.
There are stairs, but the elevator is...
See, I'm an older person, so I need to know there's an elevator.
Yes.
That makes me feel a lot better about the bell tower.
Yeah.
Now, the bell tower is called the Mahaney Bell Tower. What's the background of that?
You know, I'm not really sure, but it, again, like you said, it's a good time.
Well, the main thing is there's a bell tower, and that's the name of the festival coming up at Jefferson. I'm looking over your events. I see you have the Bill Riley Talent Show.
Yes, that's going on Saturday after the parade is over.
Well, you know, in Story City at the Scandinavian Days, I either MC or judge that show. And the Bill Riley Show is a great thing no matter what the community is. And you'll find that at the Bill Riley Show at Jefferson, we have kids from all over Iowa who go to all these competitions. So when you go to the Bill Riley Show in any community, The kids are from all over Iowa because they keep competing through the year at these events. And you're going to see top talent. And it will be local people, but there might be people from Sioux City or Des Moines or wherever because the kids compete time after time. And the same young person might be in several festival Bill Riley shows across the state during the course of the summer. Now, we have a great theater there, Robbie Peterson, History Boy Theater. That's going on too, right?
Yes, they always have a show that goes on during Bell Tower weekend. Like you said, he does a really good job. It looks like it's hands on a hard body. So they have a truck, and all the people have their hands on a truck, and it's a musical and play, and it's really good. People need to check that out. There's one on Saturday at 7 p.m.
Yeah, Robbie has remodeled a large lumber yard, and there's a great audience area and stage, plus he has his 1875 furniture business adjacent. And so that's a year-round attraction in Jefferson, and he has several shows throughout the year. And I'm not surprised that his major effort goes on here at the festival, too. So Robbie Peterson's History Boy Theater is part of that. And you have so many other great things here. You have the Prairie Blue Creative Arts Dance. That's that fascinates me. What's going on there, Emily?
Prairie Blue is a business there on the square. And so she just has different things that go on within her area. I think it's going to take place inside of her building. So I think you can just stop on by there and get some more information.
On Friday, I see you have the Green County Singers. Is that a local group there in Jefferson?
Yes. They kind of travel around the county and do all kinds of things. And so they're a great part to have at our opening ceremony.
And these occur at the Plaza Stage. Now, is that downtown Jefferson where that is located?
Correct. That's going to be right outside of City Hall, right by the Bell Tower.
And so that's something that is sort of the central venue, other than the parade, where a lot of events take place.
Correct.
And I also see a motorcycle poker run.
Yes.
Now, that's kind of where does that title come from? The motorcycle poker run.
You know, I'm not sure. I don't really think they play poker going around, but they started in a block, and it's quite a big group too, and they kind of false start it, so not all the bikes are going on at once. But they'll start at 8 a.m. Around the square, and then when they get back, they have put their motorcycles up so people can walk around and see them. And there's some pretty cool bikes in there.
And then, you know, what I like about these small-town festivals, all the local organizations put on food stands and fundraisers, and I see there's a spaghetti lunch fundraiser, a watermelon feed, a tremendous variety of food available for anyone who's hungry, thirsty, and in a mood for summer things. There's also a barbecue. My gosh, you have all kinds of stuff here. Class reunions, too. That's a
Correct.
That's a real tradition. Have you had, there's certain years, I suppose, at certain times? Is that how they work that, or what?
Yeah, so we have a person in charge of all, to be the contact person for all the class reunions. And pretty much anyone, you know, can come. But I want to say it's the 40 years that's going to be the big one this year, graduating from Jefferson Scranton. And they go in the parade, and then they kind of hang out in the beverage garden and just kind of catch up, get to know each other again. And yeah, like you said, no one's going to go hungry here at the Bell Tower Festival.
No, I like the variety, too. There's quite a few different things for people to eat, enjoy, watch. And another thing that just leaps out at me here, the Bonnie and Clyde tours. What's that about? You know, Bonnie and Clyde went through that area. It's somewhere on the list here. See, I'm a history buff, and that attracts me. Because I know Bonnie and Clyde, you know, they had a shootout over by Redfield way back in the 30s. And so that, when you get to Jefferson, check that out, because it's on the list. And we're going to hold you to that. It's going to have to happen, okay? Now tell us, Emily, how long have you been involved over there at Jefferson?
I'm originally from the community. Then I went off to college, but I came back. So this is my first year being the chair, and I helped plan stuff last year. So yes, technically you could say 2 years.
Well, you know, that's a great story. We went to college, came back, and now you're reinvested in your hometown of Jefferson in a leadership role. How does that feel?
It feels pretty good. It's kind of fun to be a part of something that I grew up going to, you know, and it's just, the Bell Tower Festival has been around for a while, so it's kind of, it's different to take a part in the planning process, you know, but I did go to college for this kind of thing, so it's right up my alley, and I've really enjoyed the process this whole entire year.
Well, I like the idea you came back to Jefferson, and this is going to be the festival coming up this weekend, running Friday through Sunday, right, Emily?
Correct.
And that is really going to be a fantastic time. And it's the Haney Bell Tower Festival. And that is beginning this Friday through Sunday, June 8th through the 10th, at Jefferson, Iowa. Come down to Jefferson, see the parade, see all the great stuff, eat all the food, watermelon included, all the shows, Bill Riley, you name it. It's a summer festival at Jefferson, Iowa. Thanks, Emily, and good luck this weekend. You're going to get no sleep, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we have Jim Pease and Dan Haug with us to tell us about an event that will be taking place today at 2 p.m. at the Gilbert City Hall. This is part of a series of events to make people in our area aware of our watershed.
Well, welcome to both of you. We'd like to start with you, Jim. Now, for those who aren't familiar with watersheds, why don't you start us out by telling us what a watershed is.
What a watershed is, sure.
We better find out right now because time is running.
Right. Well, all the water that falls in an area that flows towards one stream, so wherever that water falls, if it flows towards that stream, that is included then in the watershed. And it seems obvious, you know, that if it's a hillside or something, but flatland, like we have here in central Iowa, there are watersheds. And so that when the water falls in one area, it either flows towards the Skunk or in some parts of the county, the Des Moines, and in a tiny portion of the upper part of the northeastern part of the county, it flows towards the Iowa River, in fact. So we have three major sort of watersheds here, and so water that falls in most of the county flows towards the Skunk. So that's the large watershed. But there are lots and lots of smaller watersheds that flow towards creeks, Onion Creek here in Ames or College Creek, all kinds of smaller watersheds as well.
Now, this is an event today, and what's the background of this? What do you expect to accomplish? Where is it so people know where to go?
Right. Well, it's taking place at the Gilbert City Hall, right behind the fire station there by the new high school. And our intention, and I'm chair of the Story County Conservation Board, and our intention, and I know the intention of the Board of Supervisors, is to raise the awareness of people in Ames and in Story County, and quite honestly, across the state, about watersheds. And we all live on some watershed. And for people to become aware of where their water goes and where it comes from. Because when water flows, it carries stuff with it. And sometimes that stuff is dissolved in the water. Sometimes it's soil from the land. So we want to make people aware of their watersheds, because we're doing a lot of work with repairing watersheds here in Story County, and in fact studying them so that we can improve the water quality in our rivers and streams.
Now, what time is the event today, Wednesday?
It is at 2 o'clock, and we're going to be having a little press conference at the City Hall, and then we're going to be walking over to the middle school on 170th Street, where we're going to be unveiling our first watershed sign. So it's going to say, entering Squaw Creek Watershed.
Now, these different watersheds, that's one thing you're going to do is signage to identify, people can identify where these watersheds are, and you're going to explain the meaning of that signage and where they're located. I'm sure you're going to have graphic maps of where these watersheds are and where they delineate from each other, too. Is that right,
Dan? That's right. At the event, we're going to have representatives from all the organizations that have been working to make this project possible. One of those is the Story County Conservation, the Board of Supervisors. We also received a grant from the Story County Community Foundation and some support from the Soil and Water Conservation District. And then my organization, Prairie Rivers of Iowa, a local nonprofit that's been administering the project, will also be
Tell
there.
Tell us about your organization. What's the theme for you? What's your core system that you're working with?
Prairie Rivers of Iowa is a resource conservation and development. So we are focused on promoting economic development through conserving our natural and cultural resources. So we do a lot of projects. We manage the Lincoln Heritage Byway. We do outdoor classrooms. But a big part of our work is watersheds. So we've been working very closely with Story County, with Hamilton County, with Boone County, with City of Ames, with other cities in the Squaw Creek watershed, and with farmers in that area to try to get conservation practices on the land. They're going to improve water quality, reduce flooding, improve habitat in Squaw Creek. And so as these projects have gained momentum and we've gotten more projects, we're looking at other rivers. Can we start to scale this up to more of the South Skunk River? And so a big part of this is this awareness of first, you know, if you don't know the name of the creek that flows through your town, and you know, I've spoken to some elected officials who don't
know the name of their creek.
Yes.
That's creepy not to know the name of your creek. These people need to be replaced.
Right. But, you know, it can be easy to overlook, and especially if you don't have a sign marking it. And that's the case that, you know, except for the big rivers like the South Skunk, you don't have a sign anymore on the road. So that's part of what we're doing.
What a terrific idea. Jim,
marking the signs.
What's your role, your organization that you're
with? Well, the Story County Conservation, of course, is the the major conservation governmental organization in the county, and we get our funding from a number of sources, but primarily through the Board of Supervisors, so it's tax funds. Those of us that serve on the board are volunteers from the county, and so our role is to try to direct conservation efforts in the county. I had an experience a number of years ago when I first drove east on Interstate 80, and I was about 100 miles into the state of Pennsylvania. And there on Interstate 80, is this great, big, huge, beautiful roadside sign that says, "You're entering the Chesapeake Bay watershed." And I thought, I'm just inside Pennsylvania. How is that possible? And it really struck me how important it was to know as I'm driving along, gee whiz, and I hadn't thought about being in central Pennsylvania and being in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. And I thought, gee, what are we doing on our own local area to raise that awareness of where these watersheds are? And so this is part of that effort to raise that awareness, because I think when you know where your watershed is and where your watershed or where your water goes and comes from, you're much more likely to conserve it, to put efforts on your own land and in the county basis on our county lands as well that really help conserve. We've put a lot of effort, for example, in the last several years into improving the watershed that flows into our lakes here that are run by Story County. And by doing that, then we want to clean up our own house first, and then we'll gradually move out, as Dan has done with Prairie Rivers, to help other landowners that fall into those watersheds to help improve that. We clearly have a water quality program in this problem in the state, and this is our part of the effort to improve that.
So when we talk about the general area of improving the watershed, what goes into that? What are the things that come to mind first as responsibilities or actions need to be taken to improve the watershed?
Yeah, well, first of all, I guess in our case, we're trying to make sure that there isn't erosion, soil erosion, that goes into our lakes and streams. So we try to do everything we can, both physically and the way we structure activities on a watershed to reduce or eliminate soil erosion into the waters. But there are other things, of course, that are in that water, and that those are the chemicals, the things that are in our sewer systems that end up in the streams and rivers. So we're trying to reduce those, and we're working on a lot of projects right now. This is one of them, in fact, only one of them, to improve water quality and watersheds across the state.
Well, Jim Peace and Dan Haug, we're so glad to have you here today.
Thank you, Matt.
And the event is at 2 o'clock today, Wednesday, and that is at the Gilbert City Hall. And to get there, you just drive off Highway 69 west into Gilbert, and it's right there on your left, I believe, as you're mm-hmm. driving into town. And the program will be at the middle school, which is a pretty nice new building there, too.
Well, it's going to start at the community center, and we're going to have talk about the project, and then we're going to have people drive over to the middle school to see the sign. Right.
Both very good sites. I mean, my mind goes back to the first trip to the moon. When the astronauts looked back, and we had the first full picture of Earth, right. And you see this little ribbon of atmosphere around that planet, and for the first time become aware that this is such a delicate thing.
Right.
And when
right.
you think that we're drinking the same water Jesus drank, it's a closed system, isn't it?
Exactly.
And we need to preserve that. And this is how we do it. To learn more about our watershed, where our watershed water goes, and how we could improve the water that flows through our world and our state into our rivers and eventually down to the Gulf of Mexico, where we don't want to kill any sea life, right?
Right.
Well, go ahead, Susan.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHRI Community Radio. And before we go into our outro, I just want to send another thank you to our guests, Jim Pease and Dan Haug.
Very good. Thanks,
yes.
guys.
And we today, as always, explore the people's stories and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Dennis Hart, Connie Cody, Nancy Hill, Linda Artlip-Weinstein, Emily Neese, as well as Jim Pease and Dan Haug.
Well, you can listen to today's Local Talk Show and any of our past Local Talk Shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org.
Local Talk was engineered by Jackie Norman. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballads of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Summertime by George Gershwin. played by Miles Davis.
Now, Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show, and if you would like to join the team as a reporter, please contact us at 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you call and decide to become a member or renew your membership. Do it today. Just look for the yellow donate button on our website.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again
on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, a member-based organization that develops business from group tours, leisure travel, and convention and meeting markets. More information at thinkames.com. That's thinkames.com.
KHOI is sponsored in part by Ames Electric Services, reminding customers to always call in if you have a power outage, even if your neighbor has already called. Register your address and phone number online at www.cityofames.org/outage. Report a power outage by calling 515-239-5240. That's 515-239-5240.